Yes.
Lock I saw my leg on Brother Abel.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Abel.
Wa alaikum salam.
Oh, how are you, dear brother? Just wanted to make sure we didn't lose you. We just got you. The show is just about to begin.
Yes, sir.
Alaykum salam.
Alaykum salam.
Before we begin, gentlemen on the panel,
we like to take a moment the transition of some of some people who are very dear to us in our nation. First, we would like to the transitioning of Sister Veronica Muhammad, MGT captain out of our historic mosque number one in Detroit, who lost her battle to cancer earlier this week. And we would also like to acknowledge the passing of President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. So please keep the nations and keep the families in prayer. So I would like to welcome my audience back for Put on the New Man, our study group. And I would like to bring forward now our gracious host, my beloved brother minister and friend out of Tampa, Florida, student minister James Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Gidget, and greetings to all of you. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but He and that Muhammad is His messenger. As always, I want to thank Allah and, of course, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, for without him and his redemption of me personally, we would have nothing whatsoever to say and certainly nothing to host. We thank Allah for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. I want to thank our beloved Sister Gidget for extending to us. She's known more popularly as Sister Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad, as you see her name, as well as the network that she owns and supervises and administrates on Facebook. I want to thank you always, dear sister, for extending to me this opportunity to host this show, Put on the New Man. I want to also, all praises due to Allah. I'd also like to add my voice of condolence to our beloved Sister Veronica, the student, former student captain of Detroit, as well as to Hugo Chavez. You know, Allah says in the Quran, speak not of those who die or are slain in the way of Allah, that they are dead. Nay, they are alive, but we perceive not. This is not relegated necessarily to those only who refer to themselves as quote-unquote Muslims, but anyone who stands for righteousness, for justice, for equality, and for freedom of Allah's people, they can be included in that quote, that Quranic quote. So we extend our condolences, our love to all who are in that category. This is Put on the New Man. And we are using and have been using for our theme, the theme of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in his lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done. For those of you who may not be aware, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has asked all of his students in the ministry, of which I am blessed to be one, that we all take this subject matter in our lectures. And I thought, in fact, I know it is only appropriate that we take this subject matter on this show. And of course, we all know, as I conclude my opening remarks, that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is not one that makes decisions without the inspiration and the revelatory guidance of Allah through the scriptures of both the Quran and the Bible. And so I'd like to read from 1 Corinthians, a biblical support of the minister's directives to us. And it reads from the 1 Corinthians, the first chapter, the 10th verse. Now I beseech you, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that ye all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that ye be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. That being recited, I'd like to welcome our esteemed panelists to tonight's show. We are blessed to have, I'll start with our brother and student in the ministry and assistant to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, as well as to Minister Ishmael in Chicago, Brother Student Minister Abel Muhammad. And many of us, of course, would like to say that he is the Latino representative of the Nation of Islam, in that he is an arm to our brothers and sisters of that community. However, whenever I hear Brother Student Minister Abel speak in Chicago or whatever, his primary principle in his speaking is that there are no divisions between us. These names that we assign to ourselves or have been assigned by our former and sometimes present conquerors, such as Latino, is the same kind of division, or African for that matter. It's the same kind of divisionary tactic that is used in the religious world, with all of the different denominations. And Brother Abel is eloquent in speaking against these labels, whether they be cultural, demographic, or geographic, that divide us as a people, one against the other. We are all of the same root and from the same source. And so, Brother Abel, we're happy to have you. He is, again, assistant to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and to his assistant, Minister Ishmael Muhammad, and he speaks prolifically in representation of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan to all communities. We're very happy and honored to have you or as our panel guest, dear brother. And now the floor is yours for you to open up with whatever opening remarks you'd like to make.
Well, I want to just thank you, dear brother and sister, and all who may be listening, for the immense privilege and honor of having a few moments to speak with you this evening. As I'm speaking to you now, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is speaking live to our people in Belize, and I was watching him as I prepared to come on the program, and I'll just tell you that I'm fired up listening to that man of God, that beloved servant. He is teaching the Mayan and the indigenous people. He's teaching the African and black people. He's teaching the mestizo. He's speaking of the evil plotting of the government and the powers of this world. And brother, there is no better time for us to get together and talk about what we must do and what we can do and have to do to help that man, to help our people to escape this critical and dark hour that we're in. So dear brother, I thank you and sister for the honor again and the privilege of being on here, and I'm anxious to hear everyone's contribution, not only in what our words will be tonight, but in the action that will be spurred by those of us who are speaking and those of us who are listening. For is it in this hour, it's not as important what we say, but it's most important what we do with what we have in the time that we've been given. So I thank you, dear brother, and I'm anxious to begin and get into the dialogue this evening.
Thank you again, beloved. And that we will do by the help of Allah. We have also, as one of our esteemed panelists, our brother and CEO of BYC. That acronym stands for Build Your Community. I've known our beloved brother Jihad Amos Muhammad for, I guess, about 20 years or so. I have been blessed not only to have his acquaintance, but as the student minister of Tampa, Florida, when I was serving in that capacity, we were blessed to have him as a member of the mosque at that time. I watched my brother grow. He has always had a concern and love, an abiding concern and love for his people, particularly our young brothers and sisters in the hood who are overlooked, locked out, left out, and misrepresented by the media. He's always had that abiding love and concern, and that ultimately manifested in what is growing to be one of the most relevant organizations, black organizations, in Florida, and I understand spreading throughout the United States, the BYC, Build Your Community. This is a prolific brother. He supervises the Arabic classes on Sunday under, again, the BYC. He's organized and created the Fajr prayer line, wherein brothers and sisters from every persuasion call in 5 o'clock in the morning and read the Quran and discuss the principles of its ayats and verses. He's prolific in the community. Wherever our people are suffering, he is first. He and the brothers and sisters of the BYC are on the ground seeking to extend whatever help, comfort that they could to any aggrieved family, to any suffering family. And I am very honored and pleased to know him. And lastly, but certainly not least, he and the Day of Atonement that was hosted in Tampa, Florida, he was stood up by the minister. The minister expressed his love for him and his great respect and appreciation for what he was doing with the BYC. And so, dear brothers and sisters that are listening, it is my honor and privilege to introduce to you or present to you our brother, Jahaj Amos Muhammad. And let us hear from you, dear brother.
Allahu Akbar. I seek refuge in Allah from the rejected Satan. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Before I continue, Brother James, please allow me to make one correction in regards to the Fajr prayer line.
Oh, yes, that sir, line, by all means.
Yeah, yes, sir. That line was formed by a brother, Bilal Wadud Muhammad, out of Detroit, Michigan, along with
yes,
sister Fatima. But I do, by the grace of Allah, try my best every chance I get to add energy to that line, because it's a beautiful line and very therapeutic. All praise is due to Allah. On behalf of our members and soldiers of the BYC movement, and Muhammad Mars number 95 in Tampa, Florida study group, I would like to thank our dear brother, student minister James Muhammad, my first student minister in the nation, who I came under and recited before him and his then captain, Brother Tim. And I would like to thank Sister Gidget and their staff for giving me once again this opportunity to come on this line to share a few words on behalf of the BYC movement. It is truly an honor beyond measures to be on this line, especially when you are addressing or speaking to the people of God. Thank you, dear family of mine. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you, Brother Jahaj. And next, our last panelist, and again, certainly not the least at all, we have our student minister, Demetric Muhammad, hailing out of Memphis, Tennessee. He is an assistant, again, to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, in that he is a prolific member of his research team. He is an accomplished author, authoring such books as The Light of Scripture and When We Are in Trouble, Nurse the Scriptures of the Holy Quran. He has recently introduced to us a wonderful e-book regarding the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan titled, Who Do They Say I Am? I have been blessed to know our brother for many years now. I've been blessed to admire him from a distance, and just a few years recently, I'm getting to admire him now up close. So, Brother Dimitri, at this time, the floor is yours to make whatever opening remarks that you'd like to make, dear brother.
Thank you, Brother James. it is once again such a great honor and a real privilege to receive the invitation from yourself, Sister Gidget, and the team that put on the New Man Blog Talk program. I'm very thankful for the invitation and the opportunity to dialogue and to extend the dialogue that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is introducing each week on his weekly broadcast entitled The Time and What Must Be Done. We are so grateful to Allah for the minister and for what he is feeding to us and our people and the world through those weekly webcasts that I would pray that many other cities and many other mosques and study groups would see this program as a model, as something of an example, to where we could extend the discussion, where we could take that which the minister is introducing in a national and international capacity, and we could localize it, regionalize it, so that we could energize the people in our city to begin to use what the minister is giving us to solve the problems that we have in our communities, in our families, and within ourselves. So always very happy and honored to have this opportunity, especially tonight, to be alongside my brother, my friend, Student Minister Abel. Always honored to have opportunity to share and build with my brother, as well as Brother Jihad Amos Muhammad. Always honored to be within earshot of his wisdom. And so I'm ready to participate in the discussion. And once again, thank you so very much.
You're very welcome. It's
and
all
Brother
in...
James, before,
oh, yes.
before you,
go right ahead,
I'm
sir.
Sorry, before you go on, I have a surprise panelist that we have been looking for a while, but our dear brother is back with us by the grace of Allah. So let us please welcome Brother Gary Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, sister. Wa alaikum salam, family. I know Brother James wasn't expecting me to be on the show, but brother, I made it. I'm here. I love you. I love the panelists, and I'm ready, brother, for this discussion. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Yes, family.
All praise is due to Allah, and of course, Brother Gary, we're always happy and honored to have your presence, as well as the insight that you share with us. And thank you, Sister Gidget, for the wonderful surprise.
Yes,
so,
sir.
So, let us begin. It's all in our hands. So reads the headlining article, the front page article of the final call of the March 5th issue. What it references is our responsibility to do something for ourselves. And those of us who were blessed to view and to hear the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan's historic message on Savior's Day, an economic blueprint for the black man and woman of America. We know from that it is all in our hands, ending poverty and war. And this is the topic of discussion that, by the grace of God, we will be dealing with today. And the first thing I'd like to start off with is the question. I'd like to look, rather, at the 12 principles or points in the message to the black man in the section Program and Position from page 170 to 171. And I'm going to read these 12 points, and then we can use those as a base for our discussion or whatever it is that you'd like to share relative to the minister's message. Point number one says, separate yourselves from the slave master. Pool your resources, education, and qualifications for independence. Stop forcing yourselves into places where you are not wanted. Number four, make your own neighborhood a decent place to live. Number five, rid yourself of the lust of wine and drink and learn to love self and your kind before loving others. Number six, unite to create a future for yourself. Number seven, build your own homes, schools, hospitals, and factories. Number eight, do not seek to mix your blood through racial integration. Number nine, stop buying expensive cars, fine clothes, and shoes before being able to live in a fine home. Number 10, spend your money among yourselves. And number 11, build an economic system among yourselves. And number 12, protect your women. And so I want to start out, by the grace of Allah, with our beloved student minister, Brother Abel. And the floor is yours, dear brother.
Yes, sir, dear brother. You know, as I'm looking at the 12 points that you just read to us and the brief paragraph, the two lines that preceded, it says we must stop relying upon the white man to care for us. We must become an independent people. So-called Negroes should, and then the 12 points are listed. It seems that that really is the base of the economic blueprint which the minister gave to us. If we are to make a move towards being an independent people, these are the steps that would lead to that. We can't talk about really separating in terms of getting a land and territory of our own until we're doing these things first as a precursor. So it's interesting that as we look at the cover of the final call, it says it's all in our hands. What is all? And it seems to me these 12 points are a beginning point for the all. Because if we do these 12 things, we would become an independent people. These are things that we should do. And I think in this hour, as the subject that we've been dealing with is the time and what must be done, these are things that we now must do if we expect to survive the hour that we're in. When we look at that title, it's all in our hands. I looked up that terminology. When you say something is in our hands or in your hands or in hand, it means it's in one's possession, it's under control, it's under consideration, or it's in preparation or process, but it denotes control and responsibility. It denotes having possession of something. Well, what is it that we have to possess? The cover again says it's all in our hands. We have to take control of every aspect of our life, every avenue from our education to our economics to our politics, but we can't begin to do any of that without first spiritual and social reformation. We can't just bring an economic blueprint to a people that have never been taught the science of business. What would we do with that blueprint? We can't just say, let's go set up education, and all we have is the blueprint of our enemy, only the textbooks of our enemy to teach. So we have to take control of everything. And these 12 points get us well on the way to taking control of our own destiny, because it is now in our hands. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has said to us repeatedly that the white man has already let us go.
That's right.
It is us who are holding on to them, not them holding on to us any longer. When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad wrote in The Fall of America that this world was going out and our world was coming in, we are now living in the time and the date of that judgment, of that transition, and we must prepare. And these 12 points are the preparatory steps for that real separation to take place, not just in us removing our minds out of their system, but actually taking
physical, real steps to secure land of our own, but we don't need land of our own until we're first an independent people striving and desirous and deserving of such land, and God coming to give us what he's given in terms of knowledge, revealing to us that which had not been known, qualifies us for that independence, for that land, for ourselves to be an independent nation of people, relying only on God. But in order to do that, we have to first separate from the slave master, separate first from his thinking, his mind, and his ways, and then we can take physical steps away from his being even in the same land mass of environment with him. But if we can't remove our minds and our thinking from him first, then our feet have nowhere to go. So I think these steps that you pointed out, brother, are wonderful to begin with. I think that the tone that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has set with Savior's Day, with the economic blueprint to end poverty and want, we know that our people are poor and need. They are in poverty and in want, and we have a teaching which will help us deal with this circumstance, change that circumstance, and then arise from that circumstance. So I'm thankful that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has presented and reintroduced to this to us from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, because many of us weren't alive when this was first presented. So it's not that it's something new, but it's something that the time is at hand where we must now implement it, I believe, dear brother.
Thank you, Brother Student Minister Abel. And just a housekeeping note, please, if you would, let me know when you've completed your thought. The one thing we don't want to do is prematurely interrupt what you're saying because you paused. And so if you just say thank you or something to the effect of that would indicate that you have completed the thought you wanted to complete, we could go on to the next panelist or go to our beloved sister, Gidget Muhammad, to see if anyone's waiting in the queue to make a statement, comment, or ask a question. All right?
Yes, sir, dear brother.
Is that okay with everyone? And thank you again, Brother Abel, for those astute remarks. I'd like to ask Sister Gidget, is there anyone at this time in the queue that would like to join in with us?
No, sir, but let me remind the listening audience that if you do have a question and you are on the phone, please press 1 on your keypad, and we will acknowledge you at that time. For those of you in the chat room, if you have a question, please type it in, and I will ask the question on your behalf. As of now, there are no questions, sir.
Thank you, Sister Gidget. And I'd like to go now to our brother, Student Minister Dimitrik. Again, it's all in our hands, beloved. You have the floor.
Thank you, Brother James. Very powerful words by our brother, Brother Abel. And I think that, you know, all of us are in agreement, you know, that what the minister has introduced to us is so right. It's so on time. And even though the Honorable Elijah Muhammad first issued this call, you know, nearly 50 years ago, where many of us were not present, it's a blessing to be able to participate in what he introduced to our parents and some of us, our grandparents, 50 years ago, because we now today have the benefit of that history that can inform our steps and help us to be more sure-footed as we execute that plan today. And we are definitely in the season where our people are suffering. Our people are suffering economically. And I wanted to, you know, kind of remind us of some of these statistics that the minister quoted during Savior's Day that really helped to paint the picture of the great need for the economic blueprint of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to become the order of the day for black people in America. And some of those statistics included the fact that blacks make up 13% of the U.S. population, but we own a meager 1% of America's total wealth, and whites still own nearly everything else. All of the financial gains made by the black middle class over the last 30 years have now been totally wiped out. Americans are losing their homes to foreclosure at a rate of 1 million a year, 5 million so far, but the black foreclosure rate is 80% higher than the rate of white. 7.5 million Americans lost their jobs, and 2.6 million of those are our black brothers and sisters. The official unemployment rate is 7.8% and inching downward. But as the minister pointed out, last month the official rate for blacks shot up over a point from 13 to 14%. But these numbers are rather deceptive, as some experts agree that the unemployment rate for black people is close to 30%, which means that for black people it's no longer a recession, it is in fact a depression. For black men, the jobless rate is well over 50%. For black teenagers, it was over 40%. Blacks were almost a quarter of those receiving extended unemployment benefits. 46 million people, 15% of the American population, mind you, are now in poverty. 11 million of them are black people. 10 million American children are in poverty. Were it not for unemployment insurance, 2.3 million more people would be in poverty. 21 million people were kept out of poverty by Social Security. And one startling statistic that the minister shared with us was that there are some 300,000 Americans with master's degrees and PhD degrees who are actually receiving food stamps. So we see a picture that has been shaped by actual facts that is actually justifying that the black man and woman of America abandoned the old tired idea of rugged individualism that we have bought into to a fault and began to practice collective economics, which ultimately leads to collective politics. And this makes me to remember the great emphasis that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad placed in all of his writings and all of his teachings. He never abandoned stressing the importance of the knowledge of self. He said that the knowledge of self makes one take on the great virtue of learning. But the knowledge of self is very key as we discuss an economic blueprint, because there exist models of something of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad approach already in existence when we consider our immigrant brothers and sisters who are in the cities, but they have established what are called ethnic enclaves. And I remember reading that right after the real estate housing bubble burst in 2008, there were many stories about what was life like within the ethnic enclaves, what was life like within Chinatown, what was life like in Little Haiti, what was life like in Jewtown, in Koreatown. And the statisticians reported that these communities appeared to be insulated and really immunized from the economic disease that was plaguing the rest of the country. And so I thought that this was a very powerful point demonstrating how unity produces an immunity from the ills of a society that is simultaneously decaying from an internal rot, while at the same time qualifying for the chastisement of God himself. So I think that considering the setting of this story, of this great drama, considering the picture that has been painted around the black condition in America, and really all of the American people, we should approach this renewing of the call for the economic blueprint with great zeal and vigor. And as I believe Brother Abel said, move with great speed from the promotional and the discussion stage to the actual stage of where we should see in every home, you know, there should be on the kitchen table, as it used to be many years ago during the war efforts. Every home should have a mason jar or a curd jar or some type of container where we begin just within our homes to put in our spare change. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he gave us 5 cents because he wanted to demonstrate to us, as he would say, how painless, it's so painless for us to get out of this condition if we would pull that which most of us threw away and today find no value in, a nickel a day. So we hope that we could make this a phenomenon. We hope this, in the language of social media, we could start trending in all of the 30 to 40 million homes of our people around the country, that you set up a jar, you set up a container, and get the children involved. When we were discussing some of these points with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, he said that, you know, the messenger wrote about the 5 million workers. He says, but he was extending it, not just limiting it to the 5 million workers or those who labor, but he was even going to ask the children for a nickel a day. Because he said children today, they throw away a nickel, they throw away 5 cents. So he's asking the totality of the population of our communities to begin to set up a container to put your change in and then forward those collections to a national savings plan where we could begin to do for ourselves what other self-respecting, dignified and integral people do for themselves, thusly ending poverty and want and producing that which we have sought for in other fair ways of a true and genuine equality with the best in civilization, because we are now doing for ourselves what others do for themselves. So I'm going to put a pin in it right there, Brother James, but I think that those 12 points that you read are so instructive for us because they coincide perfectly with the message of the minister during Savior's Day.
Yes, sir, Brother Demetrius, and I agree wholeheartedly with you, and I'm sure our listening audience as well as our online audience do as well. One of the things that is one of the realities, the harsh realities that a bit disheartening to me is the fact that black people are still seeking a black agenda. And just recently, from what I understand, some of our more notable leadership in the black community met, and it was supposed to be a rather discreet meeting, and they certainly didn't discuss point by point the issues that they were discussing. However, the same theme, blacks need an agenda. And this is disheartening to me because the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan introduced us to a national agenda, not only for black people, but for the American people. As early as 1995, an agenda that would take us from 2000 to 2008, the national agenda. And it dealt with rebuilding the American economy, urban and rural economic development, agriculture, business and economic development, telecommunications, wealth creation, capital formation, and what have you, national security. But here today, in 2013, we're still discussing the need for an agenda. I'd like you, Brother Jihad, our next panelist, to speak on this, and certainly all of you can weigh in on it, as well as you, Sister Gidget. We're not going to allow you to sit in silence as an engineer or administrator. We want to hear from you as well. But at this time, Brother Jihad, we'd like to hear from you. Hope we didn't lose our brother. Okay, I hope that he will return.
Still open.
Well, I would say this to that question, Brother James. You know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, for many years now, has been epitomized as the premier leader among our people. And what we have is that there's a certain amount of resistance to his position atop our people as the leader by those who would be contenders, if you will, or who would feel that they should be in that position that Allah has placed the minister in and that the minister has earned with more than 57 years of labor advocating, leading, guiding, and directing our people. And so they would meet and not invite the minister, or they would meet and they would try to craft something of an agenda based upon the education that they have extracted from the dying, decaying world of our enemies. And this is a problem with intellectual people who forego or eschew the guidance and wisdom that Allah has given through the mouths of his prophets that today we find recorded on the pages of Scripture. And so what we have in the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad that the minister is the principal spokesman for is that program, that model, that solution that harmonizes in the modern context with the ancient sage writings of the prophets of God in Scripture. And so intellectual people feel that they must go into what they have learned from this decaying world and try to come up with that which is, if you will, non-religious and purely secular. And this is a great fallacy in the critical thought of many of our brothers and sisters who may be well-meaning, but I believe many of them feel some kind of terse way with respect to the position that God has placed the minister in, and it clouds their ability to see the rightness of his call, and it clouds their ability to see him as a man that God, through the forces of nature even, is endorsing himself and causing love and devotion to be in the hearts of the people for the minister. And so, you know, unfortunately, any kind of discussion today of a national agenda for black people that does not include the person and the program of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, I would say, in my humble opinion, is doomed from the start.
Thank you, Brother Dimitri. And, of course, your words speak volumes as to our level of development in terms of those flaws of envy, jealousy. And what it underscores to me, dear brother, is that most of the leadership that represents our people, their agenda, quote-unquote agenda for black people, is fueled by the principle of inclusion and acceptance. Inclusion and acceptance.
There you go. There you go. Brother James, yes. This is Brother Gary. I was waiting.
Brother Gary, just before you do, though, I'd like to see if Brother Jihad has returned to us. I did call on him, and then, Brother Gary, I'll open the floor to you. But, Brother Jihad, have we got you back?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, dear brother. Did you hear the question that I posed?
I heard Brother Abel and Brother Dimitri, I believe. And my phone froze up. My phone froze up. I couldn't come off mute, so I got kicked off.
Well, I'd like to extend to you again the opportunity to respond And what we were discussing was the fact that, you know, we as black people, that is our leadership. Those who present themselves as leaders are still discussing the need for a national agenda. And the point that I made was that the minister had introduced an agenda for black people as early as 1995. This was birthed out of that magnificent event that we all know now is the Million Man March. And so I'd like you to speak to that, Brother Jihad, if you would.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, while listening to our brothers, it comes to my attention that we're still dealing with a mental thing, a spiritual thing, you know? And I'm looking at the points that you read from our exalted Christ, and he instructs the believers to pull our resources together. Education and qualification for independence. And while listening to our brothers, again, it comes to my attention that much of our education, as we know it, our former schooling and the like thereof, has fallen very short of the goal of actually educating someone as defined by the dictionary, which is to instruct or enlighten. How many of us, Brother James, know people who are so-called highly educated and don't have the first clue about how to treat people?
Mm-hmm.
Nor do they ever apply the education that they have paid tons of money for to acquire. Instead, they squander it as a trophy, a title, or a trinket to prove their worth. The minister made mention of three types of men, who are hated among the enemy. And one of those men was the wise man, or educated man, who taught the ignorant that which they knew not.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why they hate him, because he's given us that knowledge that we didn't know, and because it was given to him by the God. You see, many of our children enrolled in these colleges with a desire to learn, but lack the willpower to obtain or go after that which they desire to learn. And many of our children don't see any relevance in their ex-slave master system of learning. I'm not saying that's a good or a bad thing, but why would I want to partake in a system that doesn't have my best interests at heart, nor respect my accomplishments that I've earned in their school or system? And if you know too much, they label you as being overqualified. Education, again, unless directed toward our own predetermined outcomes, is a waste of time. Our school systems have become a bastion of political warfare and feel-goodism that adults, those who are trying to control our children, labeling our children as being out of control. They don't have the patience with your child. And the base, I believe, starts with the parents being involved with their children, caring parents, parents who are not afraid to look at circumstances and call a spade a spade, even if it's against their own child. But the parents must be educated so that the child will could go to school and come home to a peaceful environment, an intelligent environment. So I believe the first building should be the rebuilding of our twisted minds. You can own a business, but if you don't know how to treat people, your business is going to go down the drain. So I believe that we should change, or we should change that which is in us first, and then Allah, it will be easy for Allah to complete the rest for us. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. And thank you, Brother Jihad, for your insightful statements. Dear brother, be careful. We don't want to lose you anymore. So you contribute much too much for us to have that interval where you're absent, brother. So,
yes, sir.
Thank you. Thank you again. And now, Brother Gary.
Yes,
go right ahead,
promise,
brother. You wanted to weigh in on this. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I wanted to address the point that you brought up about the mentality of the so-called educated class who have been selected by our former slave masters as leaders for us to keep us connected to them. You talked about the all-inclusive mentality that they had. So the question we have to pose on the panel and to Black America is, what is it about the so-called self-appointed leaders that they have rejected the national agenda of Minister Louis Farrakhan? I'm going to give you a couple of points. One, their love of the enemy. Two, they don't desire to alienate themselves from white people and the trinkets and gifts that white people have given them for keeping Black people connected to them. And as a result of that, this is why they cannot accept nor represent the national agenda, because it will create a divide between them and their former slave masters, who they love because they give them nothing. This is what I see about the national agenda, brother. We have to really look at that. We have to look at what is it about what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, which I want to go back to what we was talking about previously in the 12 points. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad talked about separate yourself from the slave master. At another point, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that separation is more important than prayer. Now, I want everybody on the panel to really weigh that. What do you mean separation is more important than prayer? What is it about separation that no matter how much anybody on the panel prays, can't solve? Man, you can pray every day, all day until we're blue in the face, but it will not solve the problem that separation will solve. So I wanted to mark this out. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, and number two, he says, pool your resources, education, and qualification for independence. What is it about integration that prohibits us, Brother Abel, that prohibits us, Brother Jihad, from pooling our resources, from utilizing our education, which qualifies us to become an independent nation? I'm going to tell you what it is. Because the white man takes us in the process of integration, and he literally creates an environment to where our resources goes back into his pockets. The educated among our people, he takes them or he plucks them from the society or the neighborhoods in the community of our people, and he utilizes them in his businesses. He utilizes them in his military. He utilizes the educated of our people to uphold his world. Number three, what is it about integration that forces us to constantly force ourselves into places that white people don't want us? I'm going to tell you what that does. Because Black people have not provided places where the Black man can go amongst his own and gain a job for himself to protect and provide for his family and his children. And because integration has prohibited us from producing an independent economic structure, we're forced now to force ourselves back among white people seeking some sort of a job to provide for ourselves and our family. Number four,
What has integration done that stops us from having an independent neighborhood? I'm going to tell you what it does. Because those who is causing havoc in the neighborhoods is the same white man that we're under or integrated with. When you have a police force that don't have black people that enter that are coming into our neighborhood, policing our neighborhood, brutalizing our children, killing our young men, or how can I put it, prostituting and whoring our women, then you can never have a decent neighborhood. You can never have this. How can you have a decent neighborhood when everything in the neighborhood, whether it be the fire department, whether it be the police department, whether it be the garbage department, everything is ran and owned by white people. And then they come in, giving the jobs that are facilitating these type of services to their own people. It's a very difficult thing to do. Now let's look at number five. He said to rid yourself of lust, wine, drink, and learn to love self and your kind before loving others. So what is it about integration that prohibits black people from ridding themselves of wine and drink? Easy, because the black people's neighborhoods are literally riddled with liquor stores that are provided, financed, and owned by white people. So you can never rid yourself of that nasty habit if white people are the ones who is controlling the neighborhood and opening up the stores in your neighborhood that are providing that type of service. Now let's look at number six. He says unite to create a future for yourself. Well, how can black people unite when you have so many black people in America who are desirous of being like, looking like, acting like, and seeking the love of white people? As long as white people are among us, we can never unite because there are too many of us trying to love, be, look, and act like them. So separation has to take place before we can even get out of that type of mindset. Now let's look at number seven. He says,
Brother Gary, pardon me, dear brother, and I really don't wish to interrupt you, except that I'd like to get to the rest of the panel as well as offer the opportunity to Sister Gidget and anyone who might be posing an online statement or question or from being on the phone. But sure. I wanted to speak to with Brother Abel as for you to go through the 12 points are certainly relevant. However, we have to be considerate of time. And, of course, the other panelists, dear brother, but I appreciate what you're saying, definitely. And now I'd like to go to Sister Gidget, again, for any statement that you may have, as well as if there's anyone in queue that wants to weigh in from the audience or either online.
Yes, sir, we do have a question in queue. They've been holding for a while, so let's take the question. Area code 314, your mic is live.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yes, and of course, in the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, who came to us in the person of Master Farad Muhammad, I first want to say that I'm enjoying every aspect of this particular study group because, again, it's right on point. And what I want to hopefully add to this is more, it's a question as well as a contribution. The contribution first, right in line with the 12 points. And you notice that's very interesting that he gave us 12 points.
That's
just
true.
Like the 12 inches on a ruler. We can draw a straight line to where we need to be.
Mm-hmm.
In message to the black man on page 174, right in line, notice the Honorable Elijah Muhammad says this. He says, acknowledge and recognize that you are a member of the Creator's nation and act accordingly. This action in the name of Allah requires you, as a Muslim, to set an example for the lost found, your brothers in the wilderness in North America. This requires action and deeds, not words and lip service. This, and then he goes on to give us another 5 points. My question is this. If you notice in Message to the Black Man, this most powerful book, and as Brother Abel mentioned at the top of the program, we have to reform socially and mentally first before we can deal with economics, and the book is laid out that way. You got six sections, which begin with him introducing us to the fact that Allah is God, Then he goes through and introduces us to ourselves, the devil, prayer, all the things we need to correct our thinking and our actions before he even introduces economics. And saying that, my question is this, is how do we now more effectively apply the teachings that we've had for over 80 years? How do we do that? I said more. I'm not saying we're not applying them, but how do we more effectively apply these teachings, actively be an example of Allah walking and talking among the people, because that's all that's going to get it. They're not going to separate from the devil, from the Caucasian, till they see a better example. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam. And dear brother, could you please let us know who you are and where you're from, where you're calling from, if you don't mind?
Yes, sir. This is Brother Kareem Ian Muhammad from St. Louis, Missouri, sir.
All praises due to Allah. Wonderful to hear from you, Brother Kareem, and I'd like to direct that question to our brother and student minister, Abel Muhammad, if you would.
Yes, sir, dear brother. Well, I believe, Brother Kareem, you answered your question within the question, and that is that this is the hour that we have to show and prove who Allah is, that he is God, and we don't show him by talking about him. We show him by being and doing him. We show him by submitting our will so that our will is in tune with his, and then his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So it is exactly what you're talking about. You know, in the lessons, it talks about no man can be successful who does not speak well the language of a people. Well, that's not necessarily speaking of English or Spanish or French, because those languages are all limited in the expression of what they convey. Because if I speak Spanish and you don't, then we're limited in how we can communicate with one another. But righteousness is a language that the original man and woman speak everywhere on the planet. And to bear witness to that, I've seen the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan convert people to Islam who don't speak any English at all.
Go ahead, bro.
They haven't been able to hear his lectures, read his words, read the book. So what was it about him that made them, that became attractive to these people, that made them want to be like him? It is the righteousness of his actions. It is that they see God and his spirit permeating through that man. And he's opening up the way for you and I to be able to do that. And where we are faltering as helpers is that we can't be better helpers than our submission and our obedience. There's a ratio in effect there. If you and I aren't praying, if you and I aren't submitting, because prayer is the greatest force that helps us, the remembrance of Allah is the greatest force that protects us and keeps us from these illicit and ill-advised activities, the greatest of which is seeking the love of the enemy. But without the prayer of God, without that, we can't even teach our people about separation.
That's
because
true.
We have to stay in such... All of our life has to be in constant communion with the Creator, which is our own essence. So, brother, your question is so timely because that is what ends poverty and want. Our people can't be poor. They don't need anything once they know who God is and who they are in reference to that God, and that those two things are divinely in order and connected to one another. What else do you and I need after that except to develop and keep the word in Spanish is desarrollar, but it means in English like to progress, to cultivate, to continue on a path evolving towards a completed goal. That's what we're in the process of. So as we become better servants, better students, more prayerful, more active, then we will be more effective. The only thing missing is our will and desire to be what we intend and desire to see our people be. For the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said in one of his tweets that the teacher must be what he desires the student to be.
That's right.
And I thank you. That's my comment on that, dear brother.
I appreciate that, Brother Abel. I thank you for your insightful comments and your remarks. And dear brother, I want us to understand the premise upon which, or from which I asked this question to you, Brother Abel, And certainly I don't want it to be misconstrued as alluding to any division or certainly any racism of that nature. But, dear brother, in our community of our Latino brothers and sisters, they have a conference. So I'll say so-called Latino, as you say, dear brother. But they have accomplished much in the way of unity, cooperative economics. You'll find whenever our people of that cultural persuasion come into a community, it's not long before you find that businesses are popping up reflecting them. Churches are being established reflecting their religious expression. Some other institutions spring forth. Here we are as quote-unquote or so-called African Americans who have been here longer than anyone else, dear brother, we yet have to accomplish those necessary requirements. And I'd like you, Brother Abel, if you would, and again, I'm hoping that the premise from which I answered this question or asked this question is understood. But Brother Abel, can you continue to address that particular reality in our communities?
Yes, and as a brother from, you know, the Mexican community, which you see thriving in one sense, because there's a sense of identity that already exists amongst Mexican people. There's a sense of national bond that exists that has never been allowed to exist amongst the descendants of black slaves in America. That's why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had to claim us on behalf of Allah as a nation of our own. When we as Mexicans identify with one another and you see a brother or a sister from Puerto Rico, from Cuba, from your home nation, there's an instant bond there because there's an identifying mark that you can see yourself in that person now.
Mm-hmm.
And because you value yourself to some degree because you've been taught culture, you've been taught some level of history, even with the falsehood in it, even a false history gives you a false sense of a bond with someone. And then underneath that, we know that there is a true historical record of the indigenous people in our traditions, and we have some sense of our original language, some sense of our common history, even though it's hidden from us and we're not fully tapped into it. Just knowing that it's there and being able to touch the surface of it allows us to cohabitate with one another, sacrifice on behalf of one another, and sacrifice for the benefit of the whole. Yes, there are liars amongst us. Yes, there are thieves amongst us. But we deal with that stuff in-house as opposed to what's happened to the black man specifically in the hells of North America. You all have been deprived of even thinking of yourselves as connected to one another. You couldn't have a connection and the slave master be able to separate families. You couldn't feel a connection to one another and the slave master be able to come in and rape our women and children. We couldn't feel a connection to one another and they be able to do all of these atrocities to us. No, they had to totally crush that in us, and that is what makes our unity all the harder, and that is why it is only the presence of God.
Right.
And that's what we are all here as a witness of. This conversation, the fact that black people from Central America and South America and the Caribbean, black brothers from the South, black brothers from the North, East, and West can come together and have this type of conversation could not just happen because we studied something in school, because we gained some level of finance, because we gained some sort of political or social rights. This could only happen with the presence of God now connecting us to one another. So when you see your brothers who form Chinatown, who form Koreatown, who form little village or La Villita, as we call it, the little Mexican community, what you're seeing is a sign of what is naturally in the black man of America. but it's being put before you as an example. And as you need the benefit of that example of unity, we need the benefit of the divine knowledge and revelation that was given to you, which is impeding our progress. So yes, we can form a little conclave of our own, a little part of the city of our own, and we relish in it. But guess what? At the end of the day, the police station has got the same white racist cops in it that impede on the freedom and rights of black people. They come and do it in the Mexican neighborhood. The same killings of self against self that take place in the black ghettos, they take place in the Mexican and Puerto Rican ghettos, showing us that though yes, we have a bond to one another, we're still dead and asleep to the real knowledge that is needed. That's why it's such a beautiful marriage that Master Farhad Muhammad came and gave to us. He could have left it. He could have left it at 17 million. But when he opened the door and said, with the 2 million Indians, it opened our eyes to a whole new reality, because the Indians aren't just the people with feathers in their hair and painted faces who are so-called Native Americans of North America. Almost every person in the Western Hemisphere descends from the indigenous people, is mixed with the African people, and we've been robbed of that divine knowledge of ourselves. That is the moral aspect that must be taught along with economics, along with education. That divine revelation is the key to awakening that love and allowing it to flow first between black and black, Mexican and Mexican, Puerto Rican and Puerto Rican. And then once we love ourselves, we can love one another, because we can now identify with one another. And from that identification with one another, even though we see differences, we also see that those differences come from a common root, and that we all descend from the same line. And when we see that, we'll be able to freely work with one another, freely practice and learn from one another, and we'll be able to show the black man the benefit of how you do these sort of collective communal living that you all have been robbed of the knowledge of, which we've been allowed to continue in Central and South America, but we've been deprived of the knowledge which gives us power. So we have some economics, but we don't have power because we don't have that key knowledge. So we're enslaved still to a mentality and a system that is never in desired or intended for us to be a part of it any more than our black brother here in America. So what we need, brother, and I'll close with this point, is just, we need this truth from the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Not that truth isn't that we're black. That's not what frees us. The truth is that we are God descendants, children of the Most High God, and that we're reflective of him. Regardless of the shade of our skin or the texture of our hair, what bonds us and makes us one black nation is not the external color. It's the internal essence from which we all come. So thank you for that question, dear brother, and hopefully I've answered it for you.
You absolutely have, and in fact, I'm very happy that my posing that question rendered the result I was hoping it would render. You addressed the point beautifully, dear brother, and the need for us to see ourselves cross cultural lines is so, so deep and so necessary for us to get to where we have to go. You addressed that so beautifully, brother. Thank you for your response to that question.
All praises due to Allah.
And I'd like to now pass the mic, as they say, to our beloved brother, Jihad Amos Muhammad. He doesn't like the assignation student minister, although in my heart and mind, that's how I see him. So, brother student minister, Jihad Amos Muhammad, would you bless us with your insight at this time?
Yes, sir. I seek refuge in Allah from the rejected Satan. In the name of Allah, the beneficent, the most merciful. You know, there are four fundamental questions of life we must ask. And those questions are, who are you? Where are you? Why are you here? Or why are you where you are at this present moment? And what do you intend to do about it? Mm-hmm. See, the minister is talking about the time and what must be done. Who are you? Where are you? Why are you where you are? And what do you intend to do about it? You see, each person have a sense of what their rightness is in handling their wake-up call. And a wake-up call can come about due to an illness. It could be a life event. It could be a loss of a job, getting a divorce, or it could be as simple as moving to a new city and not knowing anyone in that city. But whatever it is generally challenging to us. And my advice, inshallah, mashallah, if it pleases Allah, is for us to be authentic as we possibly can every moment. We must do exactly what's right for us in the moment, because tomorrow is not promised to neither of us. We also must break the chains of mental slavery, those psychological chains that binds us, Brother James, to things that could hinder us from coming to Allah as a sincere servant. The brother said something earlier that was so profound in regard to leadership. Allah did not just leave man without showing him both ways of right and wrong. Though he gave him the freedom to select the way he likes, he still sent messengers from time to time to invite people to the obedience of Allah alone and to the disobedience of all other forces rejecting the call of Satan. In closing, I believe, in conjunction with all of the other prophets, not saying I'm a prophet, but the cardinal principle of all the prophets was, O ye people, worship Allah. Do not associate anything with him. Mm. There is no God but him. Allah is the most merciful to his servants. See, we say Bismillah. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Bismillah. In the name of Allah, what? The most merciful, the Rahim. Mm-hmm. He's the most merciful. That's a passive position because he's merciful. He's patient with us in his mercy. But there's an active word, an action word, Rahman. He's most gracious. He's merciful. And he's most gracious. So again, the cardinal principle of all the prophets was to lead us to the oneness of Allah. And brothers and sisters, in closing, out of God's mercy, he sent messengers. He didn't have to send no messenger for you with some divine document of guidance to show us a divine path back to him. And the scientists said that they would not return unless they have a thorough knowledge of themselves.
That's right.
So we have to have a thorough knowledge of self in order for us to return back to our God. The return of God is the return of the knowledge that God is within each and every one of us. When we study God's words of wisdom, we learn to recognize his voice within our heart. So that's turning back to God, and that's the return of God. When God returns, meaning when we turn to him, a hand lift, he comes to us an arm's length. And when we come to him an arm's length, he comes to us two arm's length. And when we come to him walking, he comes to us running. And when we love Allah, we can come to Allah with much sins as the world could bear. And Allah said he will come to us with much forgiveness. He said he will be our eyes we see with, our mouth we speak with, our mind we think with, our heart we love with. He said he will become personified within us. So there won't be no need. There will be no need for us to ask to be closer to Allah. For why should we ask to be close to him when now he is personified within us? So all praise is due to Allah. That's how we are led back to Allah, by us submitting our will to do his will. Let him take the will, and we just be obedient and subordinate to his leadership. Salaam alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Jihad. Thank you. And so it follows, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and pray and seek my face, and I won't quote the whole scripture, but that certainly underscores what you are sharing with us, Brother Jihad. Thank you. Thank you for your spiritual exposition of this aspect of the subject matter. I'd like to go to our brother student minister, Dimitri Muhammad, and what we'd like to pose to you, dear brother, is taken from the article dealing with the front page article of last week's Final Call, under a subtitle, Black America and Africa. And what is written there is as follows. One of the areas where blacks in America can exert power is in U.S. policies toward Africa. Africa is so large that America, Canada, Spain, France, Europe, India, China, and Japan can all fit inside her land area, said Minister Farrakhan. And so I'll stop there, Brother Dimitri, and ask you to expound on those particular points mentioned or written of in that paragraph.
Brother James, Africa is a very important subject. We know that turmoil is afoot all over Africa, as Europe and America, as well as other nations, vie really in truth for the recolonization of Africa. And so it's worth noting that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad shared with us that his teacher, Master Farah Muhammad, was a world traveler, and that he traveled to every inhabited place on the planet, which certainly would include Africa. He mentioned specifically that he went into the jungles of Africa. And so, you know, Africa is an important place within the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. And Black America today should have a keen interest in what takes place in Africa. Our beloved brother, who is the president of the United States of America, his father is an African, and he has family there. But, you know, the minister has made it very clear publicly. He's made it very clear privately that we, as members of the Nation of Islam, in our capacity as guides for our people, do not guide our people toward the physical exodus to Africa. We are guided that our stake be planted firmly within the soil of America. And of course, you know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad asked in the Muslim program that 8 to 10 states, I believe, be given to the black man and woman of America, and something of a good send-off for us to go and do for ourselves. And when we were discussing certain aspects of geopolitics and its intersection with the writings of scripture, we saw where there was within the scripture, I believe it was during Joseph's time, there were several really economic scenarios where there were prophets and messengers of God in the Bible and in the Holy Quran, where they were in an advisory capacity to the rulers as well as to the people. And of course, in the case of Moses, Moses was instructed to tell the children of Israel to seek certain monies, specifically gold and silver, from the Egyptians to prepare for an exodus from Egypt. But it was Joseph who was instructed to give the guidance that they should take a fifth of everything that they possessed and store it up during the years of plenty for the time of famine. And the minister shared with me, he said that is analogous to that fifth that they were asking for, is analogous to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's asking for 8 to 10 states, essentially almost a fifth of America's territory. So our claim is here. And he said, matter of factly, that the strength that we develop here will always be an aid to Africa. Our skill, our expertise, our learning, our mastery of the language of English will put us in a position to help aid and guide Africa. But the minister does not want us to be possessed of the mind of the enemy, who sees Africa for exploitive purposes.
Yes, sir.
But he wants us to see Africa from the mind that Master Farad Muhammad saw Africa. And I take a moment just to explore something that's really very important where Africa and Master Farad Muhammad is concerned, whereby in the aftermath of Master Farad Muhammad's world travels, because he had traveled all over the globe prior to his making himself known to us in 1930. But what's very interesting is when you look throughout Africa, most of the African nation states who fought for their independence against Spain, against Britain, against Portugal, against England, against Italy and France, all of their independence dates are in the 20th century, during times that were in the aftermath of Master Farad Muhammad's world travels. That tallies quite perfectly with what we read in the book of Habakkuk, where Habakkuk describes this great revolutionary theophany, where God comes from Teman and the Holy One comes from Mount Paran, and burning coals went forth at his feet, and the curtains in the land of Midian did tremble, and the tents of Cushan were in affliction. The minister's exegesis gives to us this understanding that this means that revolution was the byproduct of his travels among the oppressed peoples of the earth. As the Islamic eschatological figure Mahdi has the same effect, going among the peoples of the earth to uproot tyranny and oppression. So we can correlate the independent struggles in Africa during the 20th century to the presence of Master Farad Muhammad, even though we don't have the details of his activities in those countries. You know, we can understand that in the aftermath of his travels, revolution broke out. And so for the past nearly 100 years, or a little less than that, Africa has constantly been kept in a state of chaos because, as you pointed out from the minister's statements, she is the treasure of the earth in terms of natural resources.
That's
all
right.
Of the things that we rely on, specifically in Western society, for our survival, whether it's cell phones, laptop computers, iPads, fiber optics, diamonds and gold, all of those raw materials are in abundance in Africa. And so whoever will be the superpower nation state in the 21st century and beyond, they will need to have control and access to the mineral wealth of Africa. And of course, this can't be discussed without discussing the great tragedy of last year, which was the assassination of our brother, Muammar Gaddafi, a great friend to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the Nation of Islam, oppressed people throughout the earth. We know that Brother Gaddafi was the catalyst and the centerpiece for the fulfillment of Kwame Nkrumah's vision and the vision of other nationalist leaders for a United States of Africa, literally an Africa for the African. And many have written about some of the work of President Gaddafi to work with the African heads of state to create a central bank in Africa where African currency would be tied to the mineral wealth of Africa, this eliminating any African nation from needing any of the funds of the IMF, the World Bank, or USAID. And so some writers have written that this revolutionary act would have had deleterious effects for the economies of China, America, and Europe, all, as we've already pointed out, vying competitively to gain access, greater access and control of the mineral wealth of Africa, all of those nation states, America with its dollar, the European countries with their euro, Britain with its pound sterling, Canada with its dollar. These are all fiat currencies, floating currencies, not tied to any real source of value in terms of gold, silver, any other natural resource, but Africa, having all of these natural resources in abundance, creating a currency, developing a central bank tied to its actual real tangible wealth, no floating fiat currency, would have bankrupted the nations of the earth, thusly fulfilling what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad spoke of, specifically in his interview with Buzz Anderson at the Home on Violet Drive in Phoenix, whereby he said that Master Farah Muhammad told him that after 6,000 years, this man in the West would die and his brother from the East would come and eat him up, meaning that he would totally devour him politically, economically, demographically, and spiritually, ridding him from the planet and ending the season of violence, war, tyranny, and oppression throughout the earth. So Africa is critical in having the proper understanding that we get from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan with respect to Africa is even more critical.
Thank you, Brother Demetricus. You've completed your thoughts.
Sir. I completed my thought. Thank you.
Yes, sir, dear brother. Thank you very much. And you're absolutely right on time. And the reason I pose this particular subject matter to you, dear brother, first and foremost, I know that you'd give an astute and knowledgeable response. But I wanted to put on the minds of those who are listening that we have to become more global in our expression and in our thinking. And you've done that very, very well, dear brother. I greatly appreciate it. I'd like to call in Sister Gidget, of course, for your comments or statements that you may have, and also if there's anyone that might want to weigh in from the listening audience.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, of course, I'm engineering, but I've also been listening, and you've covered so much thus far. You know, and I think I just want to stick with an original thought that I had pertaining to a question I think that Brother Kareem posed, and I kind of want to revisit that because I want people to really understand and focus on the fact that the success of our white oppressors is an illusion. And we as believers, if we know with the surety that Allah is God and that Allah is going to be victorious, I think that it would make separation a lot simpler, a lot more realistic if we would turn to ourselves and go back to study God one, self-improvement, and really embrace the teachings and accept ourselves, you know, and know who we are. We really have to get back to that because as we were talking earlier this week about it's now in our hands, and of course that's the topic of what we're discussing tonight. We're talking about the process, but we also have to be spiritually and mentally there before we could be physically there, which I know Brother Abel brought up that point. But when we talk about how we get there, because everything that we're talking about has to come into fruition through a people that are united, and we have embraced a common teaching and a common knowledge, wisdom, and understanding. And so I just want people to just really think about that when we were talking about separation and how we really desire to be integrated. And that's because I think we're looking at the success of our oppressors, and we really think that they are really successful. They are spiritually broken. They are spiritually poor because in their nature is contrary to that of Allah. So I just want us to get back to self-improvement because I think if each one of us will take a conscious step in rededicating ourselves to what we say we believe, I think we can bring everything into fruition. But until we work on self, work on the application of applying our faith, you know, it's all for naught. And that's all I wanted to say, Brother James. Thank you.
Thank you, Sister Gidget. And you spoke volumes of the basic foundational step, and that is the knowledge of self, the respect and love of self, that we can build all these other principles upon. So thank you, Sister Gidget, for your statements. I'm going to go to Brother Gary. And Brother Gary, I would ask you if you could keep your statements or comments limited to a couple of minutes or so. I'd like to finish up with Brother Abel and then leave a couple of minutes or so to express from the panelists, yourself included, any initiatives that you may be currently involved in and how we could get involved if such you desire and how we can reach you if we desire. So at this time, Brother Gary, the mic is yours. Okay, then let's go to our student. Excuse me? Brother Gary?
We had lost him, but we didn't lose him. I don't know where he is. He might, I don't know. We can move on.
Okay, thank you. Brother Abel, if you would bring us to the conclusion of this show, and of course, as I requested, please let us know any specific initiatives that you are now currently spearheading or involved in that you'd like to inform us of and how we can get involved, and of course, how we can reach you.
Yes, sir, dear brother. Well, I want to again thank you and Sister Gidget and the brothers who are on the panel as well, Brother Jihad Amos Muhammad and Brother Dimitrik and Brother Gary Mahatmas Muhammad as well. It was an honor, and I learned so much from just the statements that everyone made. It really was a true blessing for me personally to be a part of this. And I wanted to just, my closing thought would be this, as I heard Sister Gidget, you know, that self-improvement really is the key. If we want to improve our communities, if we want to develop and grow business and commerce and become a real independent people, then it begins with self-improvement. That's what has been placed in our hands. The responsibility, the control, and the possession of our right selves and our right minds. So I want to encourage us to get into the study and stay in the study, because it is the study of self and God's word that will open the doors and give us the knowledge, wisdom, and guidance that we need to accomplish all the other things that we want to accomplish. There's no way we will have the discipline. There's no way we will have the moral character. There's no way we will have the enlightenment, the power, or the necessary spirit and drive to forge forward without first dealing with ourselves and dealing with itself from the vantage point of our divinity, which is the key to the rest. So I want to thank Sister Gidget for reminding us of that. And I can't remember exactly. I'm going to try to quote it to the best of my memory from the Holy Quran. And perhaps if one of the other brothers knows the passage I'm referencing, they can quote it perfectly if they know it. But it says something to the effect that strange when Allah's talking to Muhammad and to the believers about the wealth of the enemies. There's two things that came to mind, the wealth of the disbelievers and the wealth of the enemies and opponents. One of them is that Moses prayed that Allah strike the wealth of Pharaoh, because the children of Israel were enamored with the wealth of Pharaoh. And he knew that as long as Pharaoh looked mighty and powerful and rich, it was difficult for the people to disassociate their minds from that. So he prayed, and Allah answered the prayer. And we're looking at the answering of that prayer in what we see going on in the weather and in the finance and the society of what is called the United States of America and her dwindling power today. The second passage is one that references again the believers to not to strain your eyes at them, meaning the disbelievers, because it appears they may have wealth or monetary or means of things that you and I may be looking for and feel that we're lacking in. But it says to strain not your eyes at them, because they'll get the reward of this world, sure, and it's being used simply even as a trial for us. But Allah promises us the reward of this world plus the reward of the hereafter. That's the reward that they will never see the enemy. So I wanted to just add that on to what our beloved sister was saying for all of us who experienced, and we all do, I believe, experience these things where we're looking around saying, you know, I'm striving, I'm struggling, why don't I have the means maybe that would make things easier to facilitate, not even in a vain way, but even to facilitate the work that we're doing. But as we know, struggle's ordained for us. And the beauty of the time that we live in, the time of the judgment of this world, the time and what must be done, is that the thing that must be done is now in our hands. It is ours to choose to do or not do. And personally, dear brother, one of the things that we're working on here in Chicago and in other parts of the country and throughout parts of the globe now in this hemisphere is we're working on getting this message to our brothers and sisters from the Spanish-speaking community by translating the books and the lectures of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, so that our people will have something in their hands that they can read and share with their family members. But also, we're working on translating those beautiful Saturday lectures that you hear from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the program of the time and what must be done. We're working on translating them into Spanish, translating them into French and several other languages, because our people all over the planet are suffering today. And if you're interested in some of the materials which we already have available in English, but that are geared towards the so-called Latin American community, that are geared towards bridging the gap between the black and the so-called brown, the indigenous people,
the so-called Red Indians and the Black Man of America and the descendants of both of those people, you can reach me via Facebook at Abel Muhammad, or also via email. You can reach me at Abel Muhammad, which is A-B-E-L, Muhammad, all one word, abelmuhammad@yahoo.com or at gmail.com, and I'll provide you with whatever lectures we currently have. We do have an audio lecture that is bilingual that is available, which I delivered in English and in Spanish. We also have some material specifically dealing with the history of Mexico, with the history of the unity of the black and the brown here in the Western Hemisphere, and a few other things, a book that was released from the writings of Brother Tony Muhammad and Brother David Muhammad, this and many other things that I can make available to those who are interested in it for themselves, as well as family members or friends or neighbors that they feel may benefit from it. So again, you can reach me at abelmuhammad@yahoo.com, and I thank you, dear brothers, all of you and sister, and those who may be listening, for the honor and privilege, and I pray that something that I shared was of benefit to you, and I pray most that it was acceptable and beneficial to our people, and that it was acceptable and pleasing to Allah. So thank you, and I greet you. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Student Minister Abel, and we are grateful for your compliance and agreement, rather, with being on this show. And you have brought a wealth of information from your unique perspective that I'm sure, I know it edified and inspired me, and I'm sure that feeling or that response is among our listening audience. Thank you, and we'll be in touch, brother, because we would love to have you back.
Yes, assalamu alaikum, Brother James. It's Brother Gary. I'm sorry, my phone was on mute.
That's all right there, brother. We're getting ready to close out at this time, Brother Gary. I want to hear from Brother Jihad and his closing remarks, and then Brother Demetrius. And again, I'd like you, Brother Jihad, in your remarks, let us know how we can reach you very briefly, whatever initiatives you're currently engaged in, and how we can participate in those initiatives. So, Brother Jihad?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
I want to thank you once again, Brother James, for inviting me back on to the Nation Building Blog Talk Radio. All praise is due to Allah. Inshallah, I will try my best to be real brief. You can contact me at GodBody. That's GodBody813 at gmail.com. Excuse me, I'm a little hoarse. That's GodBody813 at gmail.com. Or by Facebook, that's my name, Jihad, J-I-H-A-D, Amos, A-M-O-S, Muhammad, M-U-H-A-M-M-A-D, Jihad Amos Muhammad, that's Facebook. And what we're doing right now, Brother James, as you know, we work with the so-called at-risk juveniles in the community, the elders, the youth, the blind, the crippled, the crazy, don't matter. Everybody needs love.
That's right.
The key. That's the key to everything, is love. We are, by the leave of Allah, being used as vessels to help assist the most honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in raising the consciousness of our people into a knowledge of themselves, their God, and their enemies. And the quickening response, Brother James, real quick, from the people to the truth is a bearing of witness that the mind or law of Allah is indeed relevant and necessary today. And I truly believe that our people are ready for a change. It's in the atmosphere.
They are ready.
The youth is ready. They're not in the church no more because they don't believe in fairy tales. They have to see it, they have to smell it, and they have to touch it. And if we're not careful, we too will lose our children from Muhammad Mosque if we don't get in tune and continue to stand on the shoulders of the most honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And what is on his shoulders? There's a brother on the Fajr prayer line said his head is on his shoulders. So we have to be in tune with his mind. And that's the only way we'll be able to get across on the other side. So with that being said, we're still working in the community. And you can't take the brothers. Don't force the brothers off the block. It's going to be a time where we have to force them off. But don't force them off if you don't have nothing to give them.
That's right, brother.
Show them some love. Give them love. Give them love. Our people are not looking for religion. They are looking for true peace, true freedom, true justice, and true equality. They know they won't receive true freedom, justice, and equality within this world. They know this. This world is in total opposition to the world of righteousness. They know this. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Thank you again, Brother Jihad. And again, we'll be calling on you in the near future. We'd love to have you back again. Could you tell us when you're going to be conferencing the BYC line, those particular hours and days that the BYC is conferencing? Please, brother.
Yes. All praise is due to Allah. I believe this is the second year we've been blessed to utilize the BYC conference line as a fishing line to communicate with our people on familiarizing them, if you will, with the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad as being taught by the Most Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And as you all know, the abbreviated letters, BYC stands for Building Your Community. And the BYC line is a line wherein many of us from various states and communities come together to share ideas on how to resolve, solve, and prevent the many problems within our community. The BYC line is a diverse audience. Some of us are Muslims. Some of us are Christians, while there are others who don't see any relevance in religion, but still they have a desire to close the gap with their people and their community, and are willing to honor each other as a nation and tribe. So on Tuesdays at 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we have the BYC line, and on Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we have another BYC conference line being held. And Brother James have been on this line. Brother Abel is up to rejoin us again on this line. He's such a fireball. I don't believe we have Brother Demetric yet. I believe so. But if not, we'll be reaching out to our dear brother. We just recently had our brother Cam from Compton, the rapper Cam from Compton. He was just on, and Brother Gat Turner was on. We had a lot of great thinkers on this line. And we talked last night to Brother Professor Ken, who was formerly known as Pimpin' Ken, from born in Chicago, raised in Milwaukee. And this brother here is very, very, very bright. And he shared something with me last night, Brother James. He said that the FBI and all of those alphabet boys, they are forming some kind of plan, if you will, to incarcerate the so-called pimps. And he said a few of his friends have received a life sentence behind pimping. He said they call it human trafficking. Human trafficking.
Yes, sir.
So he'll be sharing a little of that information. And also on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, I conduct, by the grace of Almighty God Allah, we conduct a Arabic class that takes place every Sunday at 6 p.m. And we do this by giving each caller a number so that they can be included and involved in the reading a recitation of the Arabic language. Thank you for that time, Brother James. Assalamu alaikum. Love you.
I love you too, brother, and thank you, Brother Jihad. And I want to go right to Brother Dimitri for your closing remarks and information as to how to reach you and the current initiatives that you are involved in and how we can get involved with you. Go right ahead, Brother Dimitri.
Brother James, Sister Gidget, thank you once again for your great hard work and organizing this call. Very appreciative once again to have had the opportunity to be on the program first and foremost. It was an added delight to be here with our illustrious brothers, Student Minister Abel, Brother Student Minister Jihad Amos, and Brother Gary. Great additions to my knowledge base, and very appreciative to have had the opportunity to listen and to learn and to make some small contribution. We, of course, are continuing to work to support the ministry of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Of course, we maybe a month ago established our blog, Brother Dimitri Online, that dedicated to defending the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. You can sign on to follow that blog at brotherdimitri.wordpress.com. We also, during the Savior's Day weekend, launched our new website where you can order our books and DVDs. It's called researchminister.com. And there you can also download our first electronic publication entitled Who Do They Say I Am? An overview of the impact of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan on Black America and arguments to support his leadership. So those are some of the initiatives that we have ongoing right now. Again, thank you. I know we're out of time, but inshallah, we'll be blessed to come back on and listen, learn, and to share more. Thank you again. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, and thank you, Brother Dimitri, and thank you, Brother Gary. As time